This is The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. Take a listen.
We do not tolerate any mistreatment or abuse of a migrant, period.
That's Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas on Monday. He was responding to outrage from the general public and from members of Congress about images and videos of U.S. Border Patrol agents on horseback, chasing, blocking, intimidating, and cursing at Haitian migrants along the southern border. Here's what White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki had to say about the images.
I don't think anyone seeing that footage would think it was acceptable or appropriate. We just saw this footage. It's horrible to watch. It's obviously horrific, the footage.
Horrific? Certainly. But something else as well. Familiar. The images evoke the gut-wrenching collective memory of slave patrols. The evil unleashed by the Fugitive Slave Act, allowing deputized white men to pursue, capture, abuse, and return black, poor, laboring people who'd escaped unspeakable suffering with hopes of finding freedom. It is sickening. And by some accounts, it's utterly routine.
I was not surprised at all.
Last night, we spoke with Jen Budd, a former senior patrol agent with U.S. Customs and Border Protection and a whistleblower against the agency, who now works as an immigrant rights activist. She was on her way to the border, but took time to talk with The Takeaway.
Now, reins and crops used as whips, that's not an actual Border Patrol tool to use. But do Border Patrol agents typically use their reins and their crops to lash out at migrants and to try and get them to do what they want to do? Absolutely.
I wondered why those of us in the public are typically unaware of the abuses happening at our border.
The emphasis on immigration, you know, it started getting bigger in the Clinton years, but it certainly, as far as deterrence policies, but certainly Trump made it popular for, you know, everybody to fall on one side or another. And so more people are paying attention to it. And more people are realizing that, you know, the things that are done in the name of national security, which actually has nothing to do with national security, are human rights violations. And they're brutal and they are cruel. And Donald Trump didn't start this. But he certainly, you know, exacerbated the situation.
Jen emphasized that the language Border Patrol agents use is overtly and purposefully racist.
The United States Border Patrol, mostly through their union, has adopted the wording and the propaganda of the anti-immigrant hate groups, the types of groups that produce people like Stephen Miller. So you see the wording that agents use and how they refer to migrants as subhuman. They call them invaders and criminals. It has a robust, you know, racist culture. They use racist terms. They teach us specific racist terms that aren't used outside of the Border Patrol so that people don't know that we're using racist terms. And they tell us not to tell anybody.
I wanted to understand more about the history and perpetuation of this culture. Jen offered this.
So the Border Patrol is taught that they can racially profile. And they are typically only looking for people who are brown or black. This is the prejudice that has been in the Border Patrol since the 20s. The very first Border Patrol agents were KKK members. The one Border Patrol agent that they refer to as, you know, their first agent ever was actually a guy by the name of Jeff Milton, but they don't tell you on the CBP website his actual name is Jefferson Davis Milton. And he is the son of the governor of Florida, who was, I think he was a general in the Confederacy. And he ended up, when they finally came and told him, you must free your 50 plus slaves, he shot himself because he just thought that was awful. So it's deeply, deeply rooted into Border Patrol culture.
I admit that what Jen said next took me by surprise. She suggested that these horrifying images of migrant abuse might be part of a larger strategy to create even more support for the Border Patrol and its tactics.
It's a game plan by those on the right, with the help of the Border Patrol Union, to exasperate these situations. This is what they want. And frankly, they're happy they were videoed doing it, because it gets everybody upset. At the same time, it gets their supporters upset. That's the visual they want.
And while these images might be part of the game plan for someone, this is definitely not the image of immigration policy that the Biden administration wants to portray.
Unfortunately, the Biden administration is trying to play both sides here. They're trying to seem like they're tough on immigration at the same time, while they're, you know, trying to get people to stop using derogatory terms in regards to refugees and asylum seekers. So they're trying to have it both ways, and it's just not going to work.
Jen Budd pulled no punches in her assessment of the Border Patrol.
They're very smart. The amount of money they spend on their propaganda and trying to show themselves as being humanitarians and saving migrants, although their policies and how they enforce those policies are actually what is putting the migrants into dangerous situations. Everybody goes, well, it's just a few bad apples. And I'm here to tell you that, no, not everybody in the Border Patrol is bad. But a significant amount of the Border Patrol is, and that is the culture. The Border Patrol is the most rogue, corrupt, racist, and inhumane law enforcement agency in the country. Absolutely.
We turn now to Francisca Lucien, Executive Director of the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. Welcome, Francisca.
Thank you so much, Melissa. It's wonderful to join you today.
Are you at all surprised by what Jen Budd has said here about the Border Patrol?
Well, I think her words are shocking, and the revelations that she points to are really concerning. And absolutely, the images that came out from the border over these last few days have been nothing short of horrific.
Help me understand why Haitian migrants are at the Texas border instead of Florida.
It reflects the kind of final destination of an arduous journey that many of these migrants have been through over several years. I think one thing that's important to put into context with what we're seeing along the southern border right now is that for many, they left Haiti years ago, especially after the devastating earthquake in 2010. And they have been traveling through numerous countries across South America. And so they're finally arriving at the southern border, and that's what we're seeing now. But this is really the end point of many years of migration for those individuals and families.
And what would those individuals and families have experienced over the course of all those many years of traveling?
Through those travels, they have faced obviously challenges with displacement, difficulties in being able to be received in many of these South American countries. They have faced discrimination along the way. You know, certainly anyone who's undertaking a journey of this scale is facing, you know, immediate humanitarian issues, whether it's hunger, whether it's shelter, whether it's access to health services. And the implementation of policies in 2016, of metering policies in 2016 under the Obama administration, actually limited avenues available to migrants to effectively seek asylum. So they're now arriving at the southern border, really with the hope of finally being able to be processed for asylum. But instead, we're seeing one of the largest and swiftest expulsions that are happening, targeting specifically Haitian migrants.
Can you talk a little bit about that expulsion and what's happening beyond those horrifying images that we saw this week?
Yeah, so these expulsions are happening under what is called Title 42, which is a public health law that is really being misconstrued to justify these mass expulsions. What is happening right now is that the Department of Homeland Security has indicated a plan of as many as 8 deportation flights per day to immediately repatriate Haitian migrants to Haiti, but without offering an opportunity really to pursue an asylum claim.
Okay, wait. I don't want the details of that to get lost. Yeah. So okay. What you're saying to me is that these are families, individuals who have been crossing from Haiti across Central America, up through Mexico to our border for potentially as long as a decade. And we're sending 8 flights a day of people immediately back to Haiti, where the president was just assassinated and where there was a massive earthquake and then a tropical storm?
That is absolutely right. Biden administration officials have indicated a plan of as many as 8 deportation flights. And exactly as you said, Haiti currently is reeling from a 7.2 magnitude earthquake that just struck its southern peninsula, estimated that over 800,000 are affected by that earthquake. The assassination of the president in July of this year, rampant gang violence, widespread insecurity, and a worsening hunger crisis. But those are the conditions that Haitian migrants are being repatriated to under this massive scale up of expulsions along the southern border.
Why are Haitian immigrants in particular being targeted?
Well, there's concern that this is yet another instance in an unfortunately long history of discriminatory policies towards Haitian migrants. And that is evidenced by what happened in the 80s. When the United States previously had not been detaining asylum seekers, but in an effort to deter Haitian migrants fleeing the dictatorship in Haiti at the time, they established an immigrant detention system. I think one of the most emblematic examples of that is the Chrome Detention Facility in Miami, Florida. In the 1990s, they then moved to detain more than 10,000 Haitians at Guantanamo Bay. In 2016, the administration in response to what they were seeing of an influx of Haitian asylum seekers along the southern border, implemented what is called a metering policy, which was essentially a policy that effectively limited the number of people who could enter the United States to seek asylum. And I would just add on this point that system was just determined to be illegal by a federal court in California earlier this month. So I think it's shocking to see what's happening right now in present day along the southern border, but it is another instance in a pattern of policies that have specifically targeted the Haitian migrants and the Haitian community, which is extraordinarily concerning.
Is race part of this?
I think considering all of the facts, it's hard to not conclude that racism plays into this. And it plays into the discriminatory policies that we're seeing towards Haitian migrant communities.
I'm also wondering about the public health aspect or the discourse around public health aspect associated with Title 42 and the ways that, again, this language was also used around an HIV/AIDS crisis in the 80s. When you talk about, when I ask about race, I guess part of what I'm also wondering here is if this is hearkening back to a long tradition of believing that that Black and African descended people are actually kind of a disease that spreads, like that, you know, you have to have different water fountains for Black people, you have to have different bathrooms, and that somehow you also can't even imagine asylum for people whose home nation is in such turmoil right now.
I'm really glad that you brought up that point, because I think that one other aspect of the history and narrative around migration coming out of Haiti was, what was said in the 80s and 90s that, Haitian migrants were bringing in HIV here into the United States. So I think that there needs to be greater care taken when evoking public health as a justification for actions that actually impact and may even violate the human rights and certainly the dignity of immigrants coming to the U.S. seeking refuge and asylum. A couple of things on Title 42. There has been very real concern that Title 42 expulsions do in fact violate the U.S. government's own responsibility, both under domestic refugee law and under international treaties. And the U.N. High Commissioner for Human Rights even put out a statement raising concerns that these expulsions and the massive scale up along the southern border really brings into question, potential violations by the U.S. of immigrant rights here. Also, you know, there's Title 42 is being used or misused as a public health justification, given the current pandemic conditions. But notably, in both international and domestic public health experts have come out calling for an immediate suspension of Title 42 and really expressing concern that there is no justification for the use of Title 42, that there are, well-known public health alternatives to manage concerns of, pandemic and prevention in the case of immigration. And I would just add, as a concern to Title 42 as well, domestic courts have also called on the U.S. government to end or limit its use. And notably, a judge issued a preliminary injunction to prevent the administration from expelling immigrant families under Title 42. That injunction was issued on September 16th with a 14-day stay of the ruling that is scheduled to go into effect September 30th. So to see these expulsions happen in a window right before this injunction is scheduled to be executed is doubly concerning.
Francisca Lucien is executive director of the Institute for Justice and Democracy for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
We reached out to the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. They declined to respond. Just to note, in the past, the agency has responded to Bud's characterizations, saying, quote, allegations of abuse and corruption are taken very seriously as the slightest hint erodes public confidence and subverts the Border Patrol's ability to effectively accomplish its mission. Joining us now is Julian Castro, former mayor of San Antonio and former U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Secretary Castro, welcome back to The Takeaway.
It's great to be with you, Melissa.
Can you tell me, when did you first see these images, this footage, and what was your response?
I saw the images, I think, probably right after they were put up on social media. I'm here in Texas, in San Antonio, which just is a couple of hours away from the Texas-Mexico border. And my reaction, like, I think the reaction of a lot of people was, I mean, what in the world, what in the hell is going on down there that people are being treated like this? People are being treated like animals. And that has no place in the way that Border Patrol agents should treat people. And so it's an outrage.
I have to say the distress I feel that this is happening after we had seen, previous images, the language that you're using of treating migrants like animals, we saw children in cages. I mean, this was part of the rallying cry of Democrats in the context of the 2020 election was, let's change this. Let's make this different. Does this mean that the border policies and practices of the Biden administration are substantively the same as those of the Trump administration?
Well, look, Biden is not Trump. Trump, I believe, had a dark heart toward immigrants and wanted to inflict cruelty. I don't think that's Joe Biden. And Donald Trump left a mess for the Biden administration on immigration policy, and they've had to start to peel back a lot of that. And there has been some good work on that. At the same time, what the images of those kids in cages and the image that we saw the other day of this horse reins being used essentially to whip a migrant, what they have in common is cruelty. And it doesn't matter whether there's a Republican in office or a Democrat in office. We need to be better than that. And what's been disappointing to me over the last couple of days is that President Biden has not offered moral clarity on that. He has not said very clearly, maybe in just more than half a sentence, I think, this won't be tolerated. We're not going to do this. And then there's a larger point, which I think is even more important, in the grand scheme of things, that we promised as Democrats to use compassion and common sense toward refugees, asylees, migrants. If you look up the definition of what a refugee is or should be to this country, these Haitians fit the bill. You know, as y'all have talked about on the show already, natural disasters, deep poverty, gang violence, a political assassination of the president, they are fleeing desperate circumstances. They're seeking a better life in this country the way that people from all over the world of different generations have. And this year, the United States only is allowed in, you know, over 11,000 refugees into the country. That's the lowest number in decades. And the Biden administration said, you know, that they were going to raise the cap. This year, they're going to raise the cap to 125,000 next year. But even if we get to 125,000, that pales in comparison to the number that we've taken in decades past. So this country is not living up, I don't believe, to its obligation to be a place of refuge, a place of opportunity for people who are seeking a better life from around the world.
Secretary Castro, I want to play for you Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton speaking on Fox Business yesterday and talking about the situation and really blaming it on the Biden administration. Let's take a quick listen.
From the very beginning, this illegal immigration problem, it wasn't an accident. Joe Biden invited them in violation of federal law. He's been doing that from the beginning. He gave Haitians special protection so that they wouldn't be deported and sent the message, just like he's been doing from day one of his administration. The message is very clear. We have federal laws. We're not going to follow them. I'm not going to follow them. Come to Texas. Come to Arizona. Come to our country. We'll let you in. We're not worried about any of the problems associated with it. That is the reality we have to accept.
So, Secretary Castro, given that the political opponents of the president are characterizing this policy, in this way, right, really quite differently, I think, than we've been characterizing it, I'm wondering from a pure political strategy perspective, how does the administration sort of respond to misinformation and provide the moral clarity that you've called so for clearly here?
Well, it begins with making the argument. Right now, I don't even think they're making the argument. And the argument starts with that we've seen these kinds of surges of people at our southern border under Republican presidents and Democratic presidents. We live in a neighborhood. We don't live, you know, on an island in the United States. We live in a neighborhood. And when there's deep poverty, when there's strife, when there's political turmoil, whether it's in Haiti or it's in the Northern Triangle countries, we're going to feel that. And, you know, we need to take a mature adult approach to thinking through, not just in the next few days or weeks or months, but really over the long term, how do we deal with that? Maybe the most promising work that's happening, you know, for the long term is the work that Vice President Harris is doing in those Northern Triangle countries to work with them to make sure that people can find safety and opportunity at home instead of having to come and seek it in the United States. And we should be doing that collaboratively, respectfully, not like we've acted sometimes in the past with Haiti too. But we can't act surprised every time this happens at our southern border and then allow, you know, the folks like Ken Paxton here in Texas or Greg Abbott, the governor, to try and manipulate the passions of people and stir up xenophobia. You have to make the argument. You have to offer moral clarity and an alternative, positive vision of where we can go. And right now, the Biden administration is not doing that.
Julian Castro is the former mayor of San Antonio and former U.S. Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, with the keen reminder that we, in fact, do live in a neighborhood. Thanks so much, Secretary Castro.
Thank you.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.